for the Northwest Missouri State women's cross country team.
Yeah, competing out there in the national championships, and that was one I think initially they're hoping to get Caroline Cunningham and Amber Owens in individually. Then all of a sudden, as everything kind of came out, Northwest ended up doing enough to qualify the team as a whole. So pretty cool for Northwest, the first chance to get back out there since 1997 as a team, the third time ever running out in Washington. And it really came away, did well, 24th out of 34 teams out there at the national championships. And Amber Owens, an All-American for the Bearcats as well, she ran her 6K in 21 minutes, 12 seconds. That's a 5:41 pace. So she came out, ran really well. I don't think the conditions were necessarily great for that, too, just with the cold weather. Had some precipitation throughout the week, too. So not easy running conditions. She came out and ran well. Caroline Cunningham, maybe the most prolific Northwest cross-country runner of all time, holds a lot of records for the Bearcats. She came in 89th, didn't run quite as well. We'd seen her in the past. Again, conditions playing a role in that. So she missed that cut to be an All-American, too. But those two wrapping up really tremendous careers for Northwest Missouri State, both Cunningham and Owens, and doing a lot, I think, to help out some of these younger runners, too, come along as far as getting into a national championship setting. They've run some really good races. They've seen how it's supposed to be done, especially in the conference like the MIAA. So great role models for the Bearcats. They'll go down as a couple of the best runners of all time and really setting the stage for a lot of good things to come for this Northwest cross country team.
It just wraps up a heck of a fall for all the fall sports. I don't know if there's been a fall quite like it, where I think every fall sport was able to go on and have postseason competition this year.
Yeah, I think the only one that maybe comes close is last year, and on the cross country side of things, from the men's team, it was Jacob Kamasai able to make it out there individually. For the Northwest to get their entire women's team out there really says a lot. So top to bottom, a really great fall for Northwest Missouri State, and kind of looking forward to, of course, next fall with all the returners coming back. I mean, we're losing some All-Americans, especially think about volleyball and cross country and what soccer's losing there, but these are coaches that have done a nice job of also recruiting, reloading with these programs. They can keep on coming back. So, you know, it's going to be great once we get back into the fall. But even before that, we'll see some of these cross-country runners in indoor track and field. We've got the basketball season underway. So it's really setting up to be an eventful few months before the spring sports roll around, too.
Well, it certainly is. And when you talk about indoor track and field, we'll have Brandon Masters on a little bit later on our program here as the indoor track and field season gets underway this weekend. You got cross-country over 1 week. And they're ready to go and start running indoors with the Mel Churchman Invitational as the Northwest women picked third in the MIAA preseason poll, the men seventh, and it really shapes up to be, should be a pretty fun indoor season as well with that Hughes Fieldhouse and an opportunity to showcase a lot of athletes coming up this weekend.
Yeah, there's a lot of good sprinters with this Northwest women's team. They've got some good field events, but also, and you'll hear from Coach Mashes coming up later, some of these long-distance runners, the Owens and Cunninghams of the world, getting in there in the indoor track and field season will rack up a lot of points for Northwest as we go throughout the indoor track and field season. Then, of course, the men's team picks seventh, so a chance to go out there and turn a few heads as we go throughout this season. But no better way, I think, to start this indoor season than with the Mel Churchma Classic coming up this weekend. And a guy that obviously loves track and field, but also put so much into it to be able to get that Hughes Fieldhouse back out. I think it's a fitting way to open up the season.
Yeah, it certainly is. Of course, a lot of people come, probably scratch their head a little bit and say, well, you got an indoor meet named after your legendary football coach. But track and field is one of his first loves as well. And he, as you mentioned, as athletic director, did a lot of work to make that indoor facility a reality. So I think it is a nice honor for Coach Churchman.
It is. It's one I feel like he's usually out there working it a little bit. He loves being out there for it, and it's a pretty cool event and a great way for Northwest to start things off, being at home, as Coach Masters calls it, a rust buster to get out there and just kind of get back in the groove of getting into the race day and that competition mentality if you aren't one of these cross-country runners that have been competing throughout the fall, too. So it should be a great event and always something that's really streamlined, well-run there by the Northwest track and field staff, too.
Well, it's going to be a busy weekend on campus with indoor track and field going on at the Hughes Fieldhouse, and then Saturday and Sunday, men's and women's basketball as the MIAA season continues on. Northwest hosting Nebraska Kearney on Saturday and Fort Hays State on Sunday. And of course, both of those teams open up MIAA play this past weekend on the road down at Missouri Southern and Pittsburgh State.
Yeah, wrapping in some, you know, basketball and cross and some track and field, along with a little bit of graduation this week too. So it'll be busy around campus, but this will be some good matchups for Northwest. Kearney coming in. This is one that the Northwest Missouri State men, regardless of who they're playing, know they're going to get everybody's best shot because year in and year out, they are the cream of the crop within the MIAA. So impressive to see the level of focus that men's team is able to get, regardless if they're playing, you know, Fort Hays State on coming up this Sunday, or maybe they're playing a team that is a little bit lesser within the MIAA or even an NAIA squad like we saw as we wrapped up non-conference play. So a couple of good matchups, Nebraska-Kearney, then Fort Hays. That was a team that finished in the were they tied for the MIAA regular season championship last year with Northwest and UCO. That was a really good Fort Hays team from a season ago. So we'll see how they come in and compete. And then, of course, on the women's side, Kearney and Hays have been two of the top teams the last few years. So that'll be some tough matchups. But we saw the Bearcats put some things together offensively, knock down some shots, and make some strides there against Pittsburgh State last Saturday. So should be a couple of good games. Hopefully you have some good crowds come out and able to enjoy some MIAA basketball.
I mean, you look at the women's schedule, probably couldn't open up with four tougher opponents than what the Northwestern women did with Missouri Southern and Pittsburgh State, and now this weekend UNK and Fort Hays State. So it's a tough task on the women's side, but they'll learn a lot about this team out of these first two weekends.
Yeah, for sure. You know, and you'd love to come out here and salvage some of these early season games, but you're right, these are awfully difficult to start off with. Southern, Pitt, Kearney, Hays. You're thinking about a lot of teams that are in the top four or five within the MIAA. So we'll see how it shakes out throughout the season. But, you know, that defensive performance on Thursday against Missouri Southern, only allowing 52 points. Then you come back around just a couple bounces away from beating Pittsburgh State 2 on the road. So really tough games to start things off with. But you can pull some really good positives from each of those. So we'll see how it kind of comes out for Northwest Missouri State. Kearney plays so well defensively. That'll be a tough early on matchup, but this is one, again, carry some of that momentum over from Pittsburgh State. We'll see what happens.
And speaking of women's basketball, we'll continue to talk women's basketball right after this on the KXCV KRNW Bearcat Coaches Show as we'll be back at Pizza Ranch right after this timeout.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from U.S. Bank, providing banking services to Northwest students and the community. U.S. Bank is a proud supporter of Bearcat Athletics and Northwest Missouri State University. More on their products, services, and locations at usbank.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW is provided by the Northwest Foundation, providing support for the Northwest Alumni Association and the university's funding needs since 1971. More information is available on Facebook or online at nwmissouri.edu/alumni.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by local internet provider United Fiber, providing a variety of fiber-fast internet plans for residents and businesses with speeds up to 1 gig. More information is available online at unitedfiber.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW is provided by the Monks of Conception Abbey, praising God and serving the Northwest Missouri community since 1873 through ministries such as the Abbey Guest Center, Conception Seminary College, and the Prenery House. More at conceptionabbey.org.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and 1st Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in store or at pizzaranch.com.
Northwest Missouri State Bearcat basketball at home this weekend for a couple MIAA games. We're talking with Northwest Missouri State head women's basketball coach Austin Myers. The Bearcats getting set to take on Nebraska-Kearney and Fort Hays State coming up this Saturday and Sunday. Coach, of course, things moved around a little bit to graduation. The back-to-back MIAA games, what are your thoughts without having that one sandwiched in between the day off?
Oh, I mean, I don't think it's a huge deal. I mean, you like that day in there to, you know, have one day to prep because, you know, you don't really want to watch ahead of time. You want to focus on the team you play next. So afternoon game Saturday. So we'll just get to spend a lot of time Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening getting Hayes Scout finished up and, you know, prepared. Shoot around will be important on Sunday as well. But two really good teams. Doesn't get any easier for us. Two really good teams. We're going to have to play really well.
And that's one, too, where Hayes has a couple different players here and there, but overall a lot of the same personnel and Coach Hobson. I doubt he's changing a whole lot from year to year just with the success he's had, too.
Yeah, they kind of do what they do. They guard you. They're really tough. They're physical. They scored around the basket, and just a really good team.
So we've got a week off between the game at Pittsburgh, Kansas on Saturday, then getting ready for Kearney coming in here this upcoming weekend. A couple of MIAA games under your belt. You've got a week to digest it. How much stock do you put in December MIAA games as opposed to, you know, mid-February when your team is kind of at that point where you want to be kind of peaking near the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think we, you know, we always talk about it, process and get better each day, which, you know, I think can be a little easier when you're men's basketball team and you don't lose. It's a little easier to focus on the process. It can be a little harder when you're not, when you lose games, but we just try to focus on that. We thought, you know, at Pittsburgh, we thought we played well enough to win that game with people out. We still fought. We were right there at the end of the game. We had too many mistakes, you know, just like we'd get it to two or three and then they'd hit a shot because we didn't stay up on a shooter or we didn't, you know, communicate on this or that. And it was just right when we'd get to that, we can tie it or take, you know, and we would break down. And so we told them, you know, we played pretty well, you know, 35 minutes that game, but we got to be able to play the full 40. So yeah, this week you know, we're gonna take a few days of, I mean our starters, they played a lot of minutes, you know, everybody I think was 35 plus in that game, which isn't really how we typically do it, but you know, with Ella and Emma out, we played less, so making sure those kids are rested and still getting better this week, and then we'll have our scout guys in for our kind of reserves that maybe didn't play as much to you know, they got to keep getting better, and we got to make sure we're ready to go.
Talk about that trust in the process and just worrying about each practice, the next play in front of you, not looking too far ahead. And, you know, we go from a game against Southern to where the defense played really well, but just shots just wouldn't fall, and that'd be an easy one to kind of sit back and be disappointed in. But then we can turn around and talk to you again right before Pittsburgh State, and you're kind of back to that same mindset of, all right, new day, let's go. Is that something over time as a head coach, you just kind of find ways to move on to the next, not allow that one to dwell, or does that go back to even playing days?
Yeah, I mean, I think you, you know, as a coach, you want to learn from the mistakes you made. And I thought Southern, our spacing wasn't very good. There was a reason we didn't play very good offensively. It wasn't like we just missed decent shots. No, we turned it over way too much. We were out of whack spacing wise, so we really focused on that. And then I thought we were a lot better against Pitt. We created gaps to drive in. We created space. We got the ball. We were really efficient. Other, you know, Molly struggled in there, but we got it to good spots. She was just a little rushed, so we worked on that. This week, she's going to get, you know, 1,000 middle score moves where she's slowing down because we got it to really good spots for her, and that's going to be part of our offense too. So, and then just making sure we're focused defensively every single possession, just understanding how important it is. And that was our message to the team was, you know, from a team we put in a ton of time outside of practice. They sacrifice so much being a college basketball player that it is important to them. But understanding, like, there's five or six very controllable parts of that game that we could have made plays to win the game. You know, they hit a half quarter at the end of the half, and, you know, you go home and everybody says, oh, that lucky shot. Well, we didn't guard it. You know, we didn't sprint back. We reached, and yeah, she made it. They still have to make the shot, but that shot should have never gotten off. So little plays, and there's only four or five of them throughout the game, but they're just so big of plays in this league, playing on the road at Pittsburgh State, that, you know, it's been, what, 15 years since we won a game down there, and just understanding, like, we could have won that game if we make those plays. And it's not even a shot making thing, you know. It's a intangible defensive system type stuff that we feel is controllable.
And you never know when that play's happening, right? It could be end of the half. It could be middle of the first quarter of that game changing
yep.
play that as soon as you have a letdown, it'll pop up there. Peyton Kelderman's one that had a hard time getting many open looks against Missouri Southern, goes 4-5 against Pittsburgh State. Looked like she expanded the range a little bit too at times to make sure she could get herself open as a shooter. When you're seeing her go and kind of become a bigger and bigger threat throughout the MIAA, how special is she? And is that one to where you tell her, I trust you. If you feel like you're in range, let it go.
Yeah, we want her shooting the ball. You know, if she can get a shot off, you know, we want it going up from three. You know, we've talked to her a little bit about not trying to force it from two, because she had struggled at times when she gets in the paint, but we still want her to attack, play off two, and then look to kick it out. But with Evelyn and Molly getting it to spots, like, defensive have to make a decision. Do you want to stay home, or you want to help a little bit and just let the game come to you? As far as what defense does is very key with that.
So going from the outside in, Kelsey Fields goes for 14 and 14. It feels like she's becoming more and more complete, more and more comfortable as she goes too, even from getting a rebound and going straight back up, not trying to dribble or fire it out. One time Molly even throwing the ball inside to her, and she went up high to bring it down and kicked it back out. Does she look like she's kind of becoming that all-MIAA player of this is what we expected whenever we recruited her?
Yeah, she's playing really well, and just her understanding, you know, with her athleticism and size and strength, she's a strong kid. She's athletic that, you know, I told her before the game, go get 20 rebounds. She didn't quite get 20, but she got 14. So staying focused, staying locked in defensively. You know, we got to improve as a whole post-defensive-wise. But, yeah, she was really good, sticking her nose in. She's done a good job of when she gets a rebound, going up and finishing, or like you said, you know, sealing deep in the post for quick scores, whereas if she catches it a little bit farther out, not trying to force moves, but she's done a good job of then kicking out, getting into ball screen action and play out of it. So, yeah, she's only going to get better. She's only a sophomore. So we're really excited about, you know, where she can be.
So with some injuries, as you mentioned, the rotation tightened up a little bit more than you even expected there too. You want to give some players some rest and give them a chance, but does it keep getting a little bit tighter and whittling it down as the season goes?
Yeah, I think so. And we talked to some of our kids today too, is just understanding when you're not, you know, there's a reason the starters play as many minutes as they do. They've performed in the preseason. When we stat practice efficiency, there's a reason they're getting the most minutes. So somebody that's a reserve that maybe doesn't play as much, like, it's a hard thing, but when you go in there for 2 or 3 minutes, you got to be solid. And that doesn't mean make every shot, but you got to box out. You got to take care of the basketball. You got to do those things, you know, to earn more trust from me. And then, you know, if somebody goes in, plays a solid 3 minutes, you know, one player that really hasn't had a chance for us is Lindsay Kelderman, because she hasn't played a lot of minutes, but she's really solid in the few minutes she's played. And so she's somebody that, you know, we may see out there a little bit more. So and then just competition within the team that you strive for consistency, you know, especially when we have as many players as we do, which is a good thing because we got, you know, four of them out right now. But we have enough depth that we can still compete and be in the game, which, you know, Pittsburgh State, 2 years ago, we're not in that game just because we don't have enough depth with the injuries, but we do now. So making sure that there's competition in practice and consistency, because if, you know, somebody's 8-9, but they're good one day and then the other, and then it's just kind of yo-yo, and it's hard to get a true, you know, evaluation of who we need to be playing in that spot. So we want them compete, and then let's hopefully make it a little more obvious on who's in that 7-8-9 spot.
Northwest Missouri State Bearcat women's basketball getting set to take on Nebraska, Kearney, and Fort Hays State this upcoming weekend, Saturday and Sunday matchups. This is a Kearney team that has played well against Northwest Missouri State in recent years, defensively especially. They're kind of locking everybody down. MIAA tournament, a 5-point game in a season ago. That's one of those that you play one of the top teams in the league right down to the wire. Is this one that some of these players personally are really looking forward to, because whether it's just the defense is there, some shots aren't falling or whatever, Kearney always seems to find a way?
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that been one of the best teams in our league, a regional team, the last few years. And like you said, we've been it right there at the end in games, and got to find a way to get over that hump. And yes, they're so good defensively. They're so disciplined. They're scout heavy. They take away strengths, so they make it really hard to score. So we're going to have to be able to really lock in defensively as well. It's probably not going to be a real high-scoring game. It never is. They are playing faster than they have in the past, but you know, traditionally we're a team that will get back on defense and slow it down. So it'll probably be one of those grinder games, and hopefully we can you know, get the ball to good spots and make some plays.
I know the COVID year helps everybody out to an extent, but I feel like these Kearney players have all been there for like 6 or 7 years at this point.
Been there a while. There's a lot of people in this league that I'm sitting there saying, oh, you're back again? I thought you were gone. So, it's been crazy because these teams are, there's so much more experience. I mean, we're more experienced even though we're still young, you know, because our sophomores are technically juniors, some of them, and then you know, the junior we have in Jana, this is her fourth year. So we'll be in that boat, you know, in a couple of years when we'll have kids, it'll be fifth. And then Lainey Joseph for us is going to be a six-year kid when it's all said and done. And she'll be a third-year freshman next year after the injury. So we'll probably be in that boat down the road.
It'll be a good problem to have. Absolutely. When that time comes around. Coach Meyer, thanks for the time. We'll talk to you again Saturday.
All right, thanks, Matt.
Northwest Missouri State head women's basketball coach Austin Meyer, the Bearcats taking on Nebraska Kearney at 1:30 on Saturday. We'll take a break. Back with more on KXCV, KLRNW.
Support for KXCV, KLRNW comes from Losh Optometry. Serving Maryville and the surrounding area, Dr. Ryan Losh and his staff provide patients with eye exams, eyeglasses, including progressive and bifocal lenses, contacts, and sunglasses. More information available at 660-241-5001.
Support for the Bearcats comes from Sure Ag LLC with locations in Forest City, Savannah, and Osborne. Paxton, Randy, Rich, and the Sure Ag team provide the region with fertilizer, chemicals, and other farm supplies. More info on products and service at 660-446-3376.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Bearcat Booster Club, impacting every Northwest student athlete by providing a source of funds to improve athletic equipment for teams and programs. Membership information is available at bearcatsports.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Maryville Forum, providing local news, sports, and information Monday through Friday, and news updates throughout the day at MarryvilleDailyForum.com. More at 660-562-2424.
Support for KXCV, KLRNW comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and 1st Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in-store or at pizzaranch.com.
And welcome back to the KXCV, KRNW Bearcat Coaches Show, broadcasting live from Pizza Ranch, and joined now by player off the Northwest men's basketball team, Isaiah Jackson, a 6'2 sophomore from Independence, Missouri, and William Crispin. And Isaiah, good to have you with us back on the show here this year.
Thanks for having me.
And coming off a pretty good start to this season, the team undefeated at this particular point, and you've been the starting lineup and playing very well for Northwest.
Appreciate it. It's been a good ride, you know, 8-0s. Something that we've always been pushing for, and then going on to the next 1-0 each game. So,
you know, you look at that 8-0 record, and it's not like it's been an easy non-conference schedule coming into this. You open up with the number five ranked team in the nation in West Texas A&M. Of course, Northwest ranked number one to start this year and defending national champions. But then you look at Northern State, another nationally ranked team. They had a win against in the Hillier Classic, and just overall very. A tough non-conference schedule, but I think that's something you guys really appreciate and enjoy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, Mac is always going to make the hardest schedule for us just to be prepared for the postseason. He's always thinking about that part of the season. But the first game of the season was just kind of, you know, the game that we wanted to play, 1-5. So playing them, just getting that under our belt going into conference, knowing that every team's going to be – going to be playing their best against us, so just trying to, we're going to be the team to beat, and we know that, and that's, I think, the hardest part about our success continuing on.
Well, then you talk about that second game, Flagler down there, and that was one where you opened up a lot of eyes there, 26 points, a career high. Just talk about how that game developed for you, and it looked like you were in one of those games where you were in the zone. That had to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was definitely fun. I really was in the zone. Didn't really think a lot, just shooting the ball, knowing that that can help our team tremendously, spreading the floor out, having people have to guard me on the perimeter, and then that's where my game expands, and I can shoot, pass, distribute, and when it's falling, it's falling. So I kind of hit a heat check, so, and it felt good, so getting that win and kind of knowing that I can do that, it was really good for me.
You know, one of the things that was, I think, nice about that as well is the fact that that was the next game after Wes had gone down. Of course, he went down early in the West Texas game, but where you needed some players to step up and do some things, and you're right there and really gave the team a great contribution in that game.
Yeah, that's kind of been our MO this season. You don't know who's going to step up each and every game. We have a deep bench, deeper than we've been in the past few years, and we got, you know, Bennett, great freshman. He's smart offensively, he's really smart. We got DB still. I mean, we have so many weapons, and it's really fun. And it's tough in practice when you have to guard these guys, but I mean, it makes it so much easier in a game.
You know, and when you talk about how deep the bench is, and it's not only a deep bench, but each of you kind of have your own set of particular skills that really makes it tough for teams to prepare for.
Yeah, definitely. We have guys that are not even playing that are really good that people haven't seen yet, so. All these different type of personalities on the court, and shooting and dribbling and driving and just playmaking. We have it all. I think that's what makes us so hard to guard, and I think why teams want to beat us so bad. So it's been a fun time.
And along with that, too, I think another thing that makes it so tough for teams to prepare for is you guys really don't care who gets the recognition or who has the high points at game in or game out. It's just a matter of getting that W on the board. And you guys find a way to find whoever has the hot hand that particular game to get things rolling offensively.
Yeah, definitely. We don't really care about who gets the credit. I mean, somebody's going to step up, and sometimes it's a team win where five guys are in double digits or some guy will score 30. But, I mean, it's at the end of the day, like you said, getting that win is what we strive for.
And one thing that's so always there, it seems like, is the defensive effort. And I know going into the conference opener against Missouri Southern that week leading into that, from what Coach McCollum had talked about and we've talked with a couple other players too, is defense seemed to be the theme throughout that entire week for you guys to get ready for the conference.
Definitely. We know that a lot of teams have a lot of playmakers, a lot of one-on-one situations with many of the conference teams in our conference, and that week leading into was a long week playing a lot of defense. Just like this morning, we had 7:30 practice, and the starting squad played defense the whole time. We didn't even touch the ball. So, and then we have another practice later, so we'll get a little offensive touches later. So, it makes it a long week when you have to play defense like we do.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I guess that's one of the things with finals week where the schedules are a little bit different throughout the week. You guys have an opportunity to maybe do two days like this and maybe refine some of the things that you've been working on up to this point in the season.
Yeah, definitely. Finals week can be stressful for some people, and then, like you said, he makes it really easy on us, but whenever we are in practice, it's 100%. We have to be locked in and do the same thing in the classroom.
I know talking with you in the past, you really take a lot of pride in what takes place on the defensive side of the floor.
Yeah, that's always been my go-to. Like, I can always affect my team on defense. It's being the front line, people seeing me, my teammates behind me, and just being that vocal leader on defense. That's what I've hung my hat on since I've been little. I know that I could play on any team if I could play defense, and I can always play, and the offensive game it'll develop over time. So,
well, the thing about defense is you should be able to never have an off day defensively. Mm-hmm. A lot of times if the shot's not falling on the offensive side, that's kind of the way it goes, but that defense should always be there game after game.
Exactly. Defense should always be there, and the energy should always be there, effort. You should always have second, third efforts on possessions, and it's fun. When you play right and you play to get a stop and you don't care about anything else than other than getting a stop, it makes it really fun. And when you contribute to your team like that, it really is fun.
There's talking about fun. I think this past game against Pittsburgh State, a couple of times they had you matched up with a 6'11 guy, the freshman in there that for Pittsburgh State. And there's a couple nice moves inside where you kind of the quickness really won over the size in those matchups inside.
Yeah, I learned a lot. Whenever I came, I watched Diego play against Cam Martin in that conference championship game in Kansas City when I was being recruited, and Cam Martin was guarding DB, and I just took a lot from that, and knowing that quickness can, if I can get to the rim easily, I can finish, and then if they're not stepping out, I can start hitting shots too like I did back in Flagler, and it kind of opens up my game, and hopefully, you know, next year they'll be able to guard me normally. So, I mean, I'm working on my shot a little bit, so it's fun. So,
yeah, you know, when you talk about watching that Missouri Southern matchup with Cam on Diego that way, it's same coach setting it now over at Pittsburgh State, and Jeff Bochy. He kind of has that same philosophy from time to time, and I think Northwest has made him pay a little bit with Diego, and then this past Saturday against Pittsburgh State, you made them pay a little bit on those as well.
Yeah, and you see how they're guarding DB now. They're not really letting him shoot as much, so, and that's what I'm kind of striving for later on, and knowing that I can be that offensive player coming up soon, so it'll be fun.
Now let's talk a little bit about a high school coming in from William Chrisman High School, and I know it's just one of the things that really stood out was that game against Center High School, where you had a triple double on that one. What was that? 11 points, 10 rebounds, 10 assists in that, and that sounds like that had to be a fun game to play in.
It was really fun. I think it was in a tournament at least, and really just doing whatever the team needs. That's what I've been taught to do, and that's what I like to do. And I can score whenever I need to and then get rebounds. I was a bigger guard. I was probably like the second tallest person on my team in high school playing point guard. And then assists, just getting guys involved. And then steals, too. I think I had a lot of steals. And some of my stats were pretty crazy with steals, and it was really fun just playing with those guys that I grew up since like fourth grade, and it was fun. We had like eight seniors that year. And, yeah, that was just a memorable year.
And as you progress through that, looking at a school to do a further your basketball playing, Northwest again, came on your radar there. And what really stood out about wanting to come to the Bearcat program?
I think just the culture. I know the type of culture that we had at Chrisman was brought up whenever I was coming through, and just trying to change that and not seeing how, I mean, not just the wins, but just kind of how everybody reacted and acted around the program. And then when I came on my visit, played against the guys, that probably sold me the most when I got to play against Trevor and DB. I just knew that it was for real. Like, D2 was serious, you know. I always had dreams of D1. I think everybody does. But then when I came here, I knew that this was the real deal.
Well, obviously, with the national championships Northwest has had to have and the winning year in, year out, I imagine it has to be a great culture that you've come into and carried on that culture that began before you even got here.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It started with my high school coach just kind of being that leader for my team back in high school, and then, you know, kind of slowly transitioning, learning from Trev and Hawkins that left before me. And it's been really fun just to – even DB now. He's a leader. He leads us, and his energy affects everybody, and that's kind of the path that I'm wanting to take.
You know, you talk about his energy and things. He just finds a way to contribute game in and game out. Just this past week, got in a little bit of early foul trouble. Took a while. Had to sit on the bench there for a while in the first half. Of course, Northwest had some guys come off that took it, you know, helped to keep things going in that game. But when the game was on the line, he found a way to get to the free throw line down the stretch and pick up some big points in that win.
Yeah, he's one of the few that was hitting free throws that game. we had a little free throw trouble, me included. But yeah, he's a great leader. He does anything and everything on the court that helps us win. He's 6 foot guard that averages probably 7 rebounds, I think, some right now. But he's amazing, and he's I tell him every time that we need him in the game. Sometimes he get fouled up, and he'll get early foul trouble. But you know, I know he'll always pull through, and coach will trust him. We all trust him and believe in him, and he gets it done most of the time.
There's, I think it was in the Southern game where he had a breakaway that I think everybody was expecting one of those trademark slam dunks, and just kind of easily laid it up and in and smiled at everybody over on the bench side. What was the reaction for the players when they saw that play coming, and were you anticipating that might get that slam out of it?
Yeah, I wanted them to. I wanted it. He just brings so much energy the way he punches it through. And I told him that he's old now. It's his fifth year. He can't get up like he used to. So I'm like, and that, it kind of made him mad too. But he knows, and I know he can still get up. So he should have finished it. He should have dunked it. But it was really fun to watch. Just be right behind the play, watch him go up. And I've seen that a few times now. So it's really amazing.
And now you talked a little bit earlier about you do anything you can to help the team out. And from what I understand, too, some of your hairstyling skills has kind of played a factor, too, in helping guys with their hairstyles here.
Yeah, Byron was the first guy to let me cut his hair. I've been cutting hair since my senior year in high school, just kind of getting the right clippers. I've kind of got my professional stuff now. I'm really getting into it. And, yeah, I've cut Byron, Diego, Jonah now. I've cut Sam, my roommate, and who else have I cut? I've cut a few people on the team, but I really enjoy it. I really like it, and it comes easy to me, and I've learned a lot.
How'd you come to thinking that might be something that'd be a little fun to do?
Actually, I've been quarantined when COVID first hit, and I couldn't get a haircut, so I learned how to cut my own hair first, and saves a lot of money, one, and then two, I just wanted to learn so I could just cut all of my family members too, knowing that no one could leave, and I had a nephew at home, my brother and my dad, and then really it was just something to pick up, just something to do during quarantine when you couldn't leave for like the 2-month, 3-month period. So,
who was the first teammate that stepped up to get their haircut from you?
That was Byron. He was my roommate in my freshman year on campus, so it was an easy one for me. He trusted me too, so I thank him for that.
Well, sounds like you've got a trade coming up if you want down the line. As far as what you're studying in school, what's the interest right now?
Right now it's business management. Just finished my entrepreneurship final this morning, so it's going really well. I love it. I love the entrepreneurship side of things, so just kind of learning my own ways and probably owning my own business someday, just figuring it out.
That sounds good. Boy, you talk about a busy day. If I had practice already, a final already, and another practice coming up later today.
And then another final after that.
Oh, my gosh.
At four.
And a radio show in between and all this.
Yep.
All right. Well, Isaiah, better let you go. But as always, a pleasure having you with us on the show. And we really enjoyed watching you play at Northwest Missouri State. Looking forward to the rest of this season.
Appreciate you.
Okay, and that's Isaiah Jackson with us here on the KXCV KRNW Bearcat Coaches Show. We got more coming up right after this timeout. Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Northwest Cell, located at 1218 South Main in Maryville. Along with nationwide coverage, Northwest Cell carries a full line of iPhones, iPads, and Androids. More information on plans and devices is at nwmcell.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Twaddle Realty. Whether it's residential, commercial, or a farm property, broker Brian Twaddle can list it and market it through custom 3D virtual tours, pictures, and more. For information on all listings in the Maryville area, 562-7562 or online at twaddlerealty.com.
Underwriting for this program is provided by Tri-State Ford and Lincoln at 2017 South Main in Maryville. Tri-State offers the area a selection of new Ford and Lincoln automobiles, as well as pre-owned vehicles. More information available at tristatefordlincoln.com or 660-562-3677.
Support for today's Bearcat broadcast comes from the Student Body Screen Printing and Embroidery, located on 4th Street in Maryville. The Student Body provides Bearcat fanware as well as custom screen printing and embroidery for teams, clubs, and businesses throughout Bearcat Nation.
Support for KXCV, KRNW comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and 1st Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in-store or at pizzaranch.com.
Back at Pizza Ranch for the KXCV Bearcat Coaches Show, talking Northwest Missouri State Cross Country after the women's team just returning from a trip out to Washington, running in the national championships and finishing 24th as a team. Amber Owens, an All-American, joining us, as well as Coach Wick Cunningham. First, great to have you guys back in and chatting with you after an awesome experience. Wick, to be there from a coaching standpoint, to be able to see what this team's done all year, then to coach them in the national championships. What's that like for you, and how awesome is that to be able to see these people you work with every day performing at that level?
Yeah, it was really great. You know, they're a great group to work with. They've worked really hard all year, and it's, you know, a lot of times I'm really just trying to get out of their way. I'm trying to just be that the GPS in the car that's just kind of guiding you a little bit, but they're the ones driving the bus, and, you know, they really earned this experience, and I love seeing that for them.
Well, the guidance was perfect, reaching the mountaintop of the national championships over the weekend. The first time since 1997, the third time ever for the women. Amber, what's the experience like of getting in there, having that chance, and lining up to start that race, looking around, knowing that's the best of the best in the country?
Yeah, I mean, it was a really great experience. That was like my first ever nationals, and it was really great because obviously my freshman year, it was a festival year, and it's every 4 years. So like my final year was a festival year. So it was great to be there all week and to like really like take in the atmosphere, and to, you know, we got to do loads of fun things outside of like our practices, and yeah, to be on the start line with the best, it was really, really nice, especially because like it's people from all over the country, so like some of those people we would never race.
So you guys kind of mentioned to us before you took off a week or so ago, we were talking about this, the festival year. What does that entail? This is kind of a lot of championships coming together at once, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's men's and women's cross country, men's and women's soccer, women's field hockey, women's volleyball. There's six championships going on all at the same location. So what they do is they put all the athletes up at the same hotel and create like a athlete village type of atmosphere. It provide opportunities for every athlete to interact with each other. They have opening ceremonies, closing ceremonies, and yeah, so all the championships are going on at once, and it makes for a pretty awesome environment out there.
And you want it to feel like this is the best of the best and a big deal, because it's huge, a big time accomplishment to get to this point. Amber, take me through meeting new athletes, seeing all these places, getting to experience it all, outside of running, which we're going to talk about momentarily. What's the highlight?
Well, we went to the first Starbucks. That was really fun. We also went to the Space Needle, and that was pretty scary because it is a lot of just glass, and you can literally just see straight down to the floor. So that was quite scary. We also went to like the market and did all of that. But like within the hotel, they had like a games like lounge. So like they had like Pac-Man, they had like PlayStations and everything, and loads of other games. Like they had a basketball shootout thing, so it was really fun because like in the evenings everyone was just in there playing games, so it was really great.
And you love to see the loose atmosphere too of be here to enjoy it. You want to compete and do well, but you want to be able to take the whole experience in at the same time. Not only do you compete and enjoy it, you come away as an All-American. Talk to me about what that's like. You finish running yours at 21 minutes, 12 seconds in your 6K. Do you know where you're at? Do you have a good feeling of, this is where I need to be? Are you a little bit nervous coming across that finish line?
So I'd spoken with Wick like before, and to be All-American, you had to be like top 40. And we knew I could be around 30th to 50th, maybe like top 60. But obviously, because of like the range and like how many people are in the race, but like, because obviously they're all really good teams, everybody's pretty close together. So like that range within about 30 places could only be about 20, 30 seconds. Like it's really, like, there's a lot of people coming in at once and you're literally a second or two from other people. So then like starting the race, I was super nervous, but we decided if I just went out really hard and then just held on, there'd be less of a chance of other people catching me. And if they do, I won't like get overtaken that much. But it was really, really muddy. Like it was kind of like England cross country. It was just really muddy. Like I had really long spikes in. It was really wet. But I really like the conditions because I like the mud. But yeah, it was definitely different from the rest of the year because I could wear flats and have no trouble.
Did it feel like it was more a little bit being back home running through that?
Yeah.
Is that where you kind of embraced that point?
Yeah, definitely.
So, Wick, as you mentioned, just, you know, a few seconds separates there's a lot of people coming through all at once. As you're watching that come across, and, of course, along with Amber, Caroline Cunningham's been one of the top in the MIAA. She's only a handful of seconds behind Amber, just missing that cut. How hard is that to see as far as a coach of, like, it's hard, but, like, man, they came out and competed so hard all season.
Yeah. So when we went into the race plan was I analyzed the last 5 or 6 years of Nationals results, and the nice thing with the technology now is they have mats you run across that record your splits and your place and your time at various locations in the course, about every kilometer in a 6-kilometer race. So what I looked at was by about 2K, you got to be basically where you want to be. You better be in the top 40 if you want to get top 40, or top wherever if you want to get top wherever. And then I looked at a couple national years. 4 years ago, it was a festival year in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It was terribly muddy and sloshy. And then 4 years before that, on the festival year, it was in Louisville, and it was terribly muddy and sloshy. So that's just a theme, I guess, now of festival years. But I looked at that, and even more so, like positioning matters early on, even to a higher degree, and we discussed that early on, and Amber executed that extremely well. She put herself up in the top 20. She fell a few spots, and the nice thing is I could kind of count people as she was going by, and I'm like, all right, you're in about 25th-ish. You're going to hold on. You got to keep going, though, and she knew it, and she was probably scared her going into the last 400 meters. She was probably scared so many people were going to come flying by her, but she held on really well and just executed that race plan.
When you're going and you're told start out hard and just hold on, I assume the first couple K, you're like, I am flying and I feel pretty good, but you probably hit a wall at some point. Did you hit a wall? And at some point, you're kind of nervous of like, uh-oh, I could slip a few more spots here.
I definitely hit a wall in the last lap because there was a couple of people passing me. And it's kind of like, you know, like how many more people will pass me? And it's like, I have to keep going at this pace because if I slow down, then more people will pass me. But it was more just like, it was like the last 300-400 definitely, because like people are really speeding up to get to the finish. And like the ground isn't great to speed up. So like you try and speed up, but like, so, yeah, there was quite a few people that were really sprinting at the last bit, which it was very hard to like stay in position.
What's the feeling I'm going to come across? Is it just overwhelmingly like, whew, found a way to survive that?
Yeah, and it was almost like being back in England. It was really like, wow, that was really that muddy, and like I really did wear spikes, and that's the only race I've worn spikes in all year for cross country, and it was like I definitely needed spikes for that race, like it was so wet.
Well, so you mentioned that you transferred in to Northwest Missouri State, but originally from Lincoln, England. How do you make it to the U.S. and ultimately probably didn't expect to end up in Maryville, but here you are, a Bearcat and an All-American.
So when I first came to the US, I went with like an agency, and you like pay them to like help you find somewhere. And I went to Mount Olive University in North Carolina. And then after my coaches left, another athletes kind of left, and my second year, I didn't really have anyone to run with. So then I transferred to Northwest for my junior year, and I went on the portal for that. And then Gibson, who was our old coach, he found me on there and like recruited me.
So I had the chance these last couple years, I guess maybe three going back to COVID year of 2020, to get to know Northwest and the teammates and everybody around you. What's the relationship like between yourself and Caroline that you have been to the top at Northwest Missouri State and around the region too?
Yeah, me and Caroline get on really well, and it's been really nice because when I was recruited, we were at the exact same times. And obviously, we've both improved a lot since then, but we've always kind of still trained together and run together. And it's so nice to have, like, a teammate that, like, is around the same speed as you to, like, train with and to push you. And, like, I didn't really meet any of the team before I came because it was COVID, so that kind of messed everything up. But, yeah, like, I was really glad, like, once I met all the team, like, I really like everyone on the team, so it's really great.
Wick, you think about these seniors you have going through, and after that, I mean, you've got some players coming in, some runners that are have the chance to continue to grow. You have Kaylee Harp and Alina Tebow that are sophomores. Lydia McLaughlin ran well. She's just a freshman. They had the chance to learn from two of the best of Northwest Missouri State all time. That has to be cool to see. All right, you learned from them. Now it's your time to grow.
Yeah, exactly. Caroline and Amber have been great leaders for the team. They're really just showing them the right path, and it's kind of up to them now to decide to take that path the next year. It's big shoes to fill, and you don't have to fill those shoes all at once either. You can do it some baby steps, you know, working together, and it doesn't just have to be two ladies. I mean, I'm looking for 10 ladies to step up, you know, and be leaders in their own way, and Caroline and Amber are doing a great job showing them kind of the right way to go.
Northwest Missouri State cross country season wrapping up now, kind of getting ready for the indoor track and field season. How fast do you jump into that?
I have a week off, and so I'm not doing the first indoor meet, but I'll do the one after Christmas. I'll start my indoor season then, and I think Caroline is racing this weekend, so that'll be exciting for her.
For sure, getting right back into it. Wick, coaching cross country, but also being with the indoor, then the outdoor track and field, the long distances. How do things change from your perspective, too, of just obviously you're running different courses, different lengths, everything?
Yeah, so, you know, transitioning from cross country to track's probably the hardest transition, just because, you know, for men we're training for 8K, 10K, women 5K, 6K, and I got people in that group that are now going to run 800 meters miles, so they went from running for a half hour to under 2 minutes for some of those guys, and it's just a big transition in training. We try to take it really slow going early on. Let's make that transition gradual early on. Transitioning from indoor to outdoor is a little bit easier, you know, similar events and whatnot, and then you know, having been a distance runner myself, I've gone through it, which is nice to know what it feels like to train year-round. And I'm a little nicer than a lot of distance coaches. I give them 3 weeks off at the end of outdoor season. Most coaches give you a week or two, and I give them a pretty big break afterwards and let them fully just be like, all right, I'm going to be like a normal person for 3 weeks here and not be running 70, 80 miles a week or whatever they're running, you know. You know, and honestly, it's just a lifestyle that the team's embraced. You know, they're ready to commit to it. They're ready to enjoy stuff outside of running at the same time. But, you know, it's just one of those things where it's like you almost start to miss it when you're not doing it.
Oh, for sure. And a well-deserved break at this point, too, as the Northwest women coming back from the national championships for cross country. Amber, congrats on everything. Thanks for joining us. Wick, same to you. And looking forward to talking indoor track and field as we go throughout the winter as well.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's Amber Owens, Wick Cunningham joining us. We will take a break and be back with more on KXCV KRNW.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from U.S. Bank, providing banking services to Northwest students and the community. U.S. Bank is a proud supporter of Bearcat Athletics and Northwest Missouri State University. More on their products, services, and locations at usbank.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Consumers Oil Company in Maryville. Consumers has been supporting farmers in Northwest Missouri since 1928 by providing grain merchandising, tire, and agronomy services. More information is at consumersoilmaryville.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the Bearcat Booster Club, impacting every Northwest student athlete by providing a source of funds to improve athletic equipment for teams and programs. Membership information is available at bearcatsports.com.
Support for KXCV KRNW is provided by the Monks of Conception Abbey, praising God and serving the Northwest Missouri community since 1873 through ministries such as the Abbey Guest Center, Conception Seminary College, and the Prinery House. More at conceptionabbey.org.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from Pizza Ranch at US 71 and First Street in Maryville. Pizza Ranch's buffet is open daily and features pizza and fried chicken with all the trimmings, plus a salad bar with dessert and ice cream. More in-store or at pizzaranch.com.
And welcome back to the KXCV KRNW Bearcat Coaches Shows. We are continuing to talk track and field as the head coach of the track team, Brandon Masters, joins us along with Nikki Wettstein. And again, it's great having both of you on the show.
Thank you.
And let's just talk a little bit about what you got coming up. It's the indoor opener this upcoming weekend, as we've got the Mel Church Mug Classic coming up, and just talk a little bit about how great this event is.
Well, we're excited to start off, you know, track and field. Obviously, cross country just finished up this past weekend, so, you know, we're in season year-round, obviously. But track and field, these kids have been working hard that are track-only kids for many, many weeks, and we're excited to see them compete for the first time. It's going to be pretty laid-back meet as far as, you know, our level. It's only probably less than 500 student-athletes, which seems like a big meet, but it isn't for us. So it'll be a light meet. It'll be a nice meet for some of our young people, our new recruits, freshmen this year, and new people to, you know, run and compete in Northwest gear.
I would imagine for everyone involved with this, as you mentioned, it's a year-round sport for the most part, but also just that after all the hard training they've done throughout the fall, for those that haven't been involved with cross country, it's they're looking forward to just getting out and doing some actual competing.
Oh, yeah, they're chomping at the bit right now.
Yeah, you know, I think the we won't go real deep this weekend, so we've really allowed the kids to kind of talk with us about what they'd like to compete in. Many of our kids are, you know, one, two, but many are three event people. So, you know, we're gonna take it pretty light, have a lot of fun, get a good mark, hopefully, and you know, and then we get to release them for Christmas break for, you know, 5 weeks. So hopefully we get a good mark and they want to work hard over break, and that helps us. If they get a poor mark, then they want to work hard over break, and that's good for us. So either way, we get what we want.
Yeah, there you go. And as far as trying to keep them fresh through all the workouts in the off season, I imagine that has to be something that's very tough too, because just week in, week out, you're trying to get ready for the season, but there's really nothing to compete on the weekends with. How do you keep the athletes fresh to be sure that they're ready to go this time?
It's hard. I mean, we're in week 14 of training. And, you know, most sports come in and they have, you know, a few weeks and they get to compete. We don't. So there are times that, you know, we had turkey time trials, for instance, and we bring in our timer who likes it because he can set up for the meet and make sure he's got everything ready to go for this weekend. And it gives our kids an opportunity to compete prior to Thanksgiving break, and we really like to fill that time. You know, two weeks from Thanksgiving, things really get tough for our kids. Obviously, academics start to get really hard. They're behind in a class. They're freaking out because they don't have much time left in the semester. But we like to do turkey time trials because it's fun. They get to compete. They wear jerseys. I mean, it's just a practice. But those are some types of things that we do to try to keep them excited about the semester.
And with this meet coming up, does talk about the strengths that you feel like this team has this year on both men's and women's side here. That again, for the women, I think the MIAA preseason coaches poll had the women at third, the men at seventh. And just what will be the strengths of both of these teams this year?
I think our biggest strength this year is going to be just more of the team camaraderie. The culture is amazing this year. Everybody is very bought in to each other, to us as coaches and the program as a whole. So I think that's going to really lead our kids into a successful season. It's actually funny, whenever the rankings came out, some of our kids were a little upset at what we were chosen by the coaching body. And so I think that kind of motivates them to kind of be a little bit better and really show up during these meets.
Yeah, so you mentioned team culture, and you're right on. And we've had many conversations about how our team is just different this year. And, you know, when you have 80 people on a roster and you only have three full-time coaches, you know, and it's very difficult. And got to remember, we're unique that we have 80 people on roster, but we have men and women. Mm-hmm. We have events from distance to throws and everything in between. So it's a very interesting blend of characters. And so when you have all of that differences of people on the same team, it can be a really great thing, or it can be a really bad thing. And this team has stepped up and they have leaders. This is the first time I feel like, well, got to remember, this is the first time I've had almost all my recruits. This is year five for me. Mm-hmm. And so everybody on my team but four or three are completely brought in since I arrived. And so I think, we do a pretty good job of vetting and making sure that this team comprised the people that really want to be here and for the right reasons. And I love this team because we have leaders. We have people that have been brought in my system and know what I expect. And I think that's why it's such a great team chemistry right now. It's a really exciting time for us.
Now, when you talk about having those leaders, what are some of the things when you recruit athletes into the program that they say, well, this person might be someone that can become a leader in the program? What are some of the characteristics that you look for in these?
I think it kind of depends on the individual athlete. You know, we have a handful of kids who are in-your-face leaders. They'll tell you when you're doing the right things and the wrong things, which is great. We need those people who can step up and really kind of teach the underclassmen. And then we also have those who are lead by example. And I think there's a role for each. And during the recruiting process, you know, we look at their high school. What was their role during their high school, right? Were they the only sprinter, the only hurdler? And then we kind of look to, like, we ask our kids after a certain athlete's visit, we're like, hey, what did you think, right? Because at the end of the day, if they don't gel, it's not going to work, right? It's not just with us coaches, it's with the athletes as well. So I think, as coaches, obviously we try to do our best vetting those recruits, but I think our team does it themselves. You know, they have this expectation, and if kids are willing to buy in and see that expectation through, I think that those are the kids who fit really well with us.
Yeah, and I'll add on to that a couple of things I really look at. One is, do you enjoy working out?
Absolutely.
We do not have a ball. It is not a game. You know, so we have to be able to love the weight room. We have to be able to love training and enjoy the process of that. Second to that, are you a nerd in track and field? Do you love track and field? Because name your three favorite athletes in track and field. If they can't name anybody, I'm like, that's a red flag for me, because I want people that love our sport.
Right.
And that's what's going to set you apart, because our sport is very difficult. You know, our sport, our training is other programs' punishment. Right? We run, right?
That's
and,
right,
and
yeah.
So when you get in trouble, you run on other teams. So you've got to love our sport and what it's about. And I will tell you, our team loves track and field, and they love the workout process. Hey, they may complain a little bit, of course.
Right, everybody does.
Yeah, yeah. Is it this hard, coach? Yes, it is. But they understand why it's going to be great in the end for them if we do this hard workout, for instance. So.
I would imagine, too, when you talk about that, too, the hard workouts that they deal for. In some of the events, it's you're doing such a hard workout for an event that lasts, 10, 12 seconds or so, and you have to be your best for those 10 or 12 seconds and it to be ready to go.
Right. It's hard. It's very hard. Then you got events that take 2 days to get done. You know, our multi-event ladies, for instance, they compete in their first multi on Friday, and they have five events. And in, 5-6 hours, one day. And so for Turkey Time Trial, you know what they asked to do? They said, let's do a multi in an hour. They did five events in an hour. That's someone who...
8 minutes.
That's right.
Oh, good
8
truth.
Minutes between.
Yeah, that's somebody who loves the sport and loves their event. And that's what we look for. And that's what's exciting. This year we have that group. I don't know if we're good enough. We're battling teams that have 120 people on their roster. We have, just under 80. You know, that's very difficult. We don't fill all the events. Right. If we don't do throws as much as other sports, or other teams, which we do not, it's going to be hard to battle them and score the amount of points to beat them as a team. And that's what's difficult. It's like going into a boxing match and you're like, oh, let me give your left hand and tie it behind your back. That's what I feel like we are sometimes, where we don't have the roster depth to be able to fill out every event like some of the other teams in our conference. But
now this weekend, it's the Mel Churchma Invitational, and just talk about the competition that's coming in for this event and just the number of teams that will be participating here.
It'll, like we mentioned, it is a little bit of a smaller meet for us. We have about 12 to 14 teams scheduled, about 375 athletes that can go up in a day or two. But the competition looks pretty good. We have Lincoln coming. You know, they're in our conference. We're very excited to go against them and kind of see what they are bringing in this year. And then even, the local schools, Mo West and, some of the NAIA schools coming. We're really excited to see them. So
yeah, it's nice that it's not too, too much competition where our kids are really super nervous. They're actually excited to see a couple of our MIAA teams, but not all of them, and that's good. And then, of course, our NAIA friends around this area, they love us. They love this meet. We host their, the Heart of America Conference. We host their championship here at Hughes Fieldhouse every year. So we get a lot of those teams for each one of our meets that we host.
Yeah, I imagine you've got a lot of teams just kind of lining up to compete at the Hughes Fieldhouse every meet that you guys have.
Yeah, the word is out for sure. I mean, the track is fast. We don't really want to host a meet with 1,500 to 2,000 athletes, although we will this year. Last year's Bearcat was over 1,500 athletes, and that's a daunting task for us coaches that we'll have to, run the meet, but also, try to coach our athletes as well, which is difficult. But, a lot of people do want to come to this meet because we host a really nice, very well-run meet, but it's great competition, and the track is hard and it's fast, so we definitely get good marks.
All right, well, it looks like it'll be a fun one this weekend, both Friday and Saturday, out at the Hughes Fieldhouse. So the track and field fans or anyone that just wants to come out and watch some great competitions, be a great weekend to come out there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come say hi to us at Fields Hughes House.
All right, sounds great. Appreciate both Nikki and Brandon being with us here on the show here today. Don't forget that we've got basketball coming up this weekend, Northwest Missouri State, Nebraska, Kearney on Saturday. The women tip off at 1:30, the men at 3:30. Our broadcast begins at noon with our pregame for the women. You're listening to KXCV Maryville and KRNW Chillicothe. For Matt Tritton, I'm John Coffey, and so long from Pizza Ranch.
Told reporters that criminal referrals are likely.
What we've decided is that we will probably make referrals. As to how many, we've not decided on the number.
Thompson added the committee hasn't made a decision on who would be named in a criminal referral. He said the panel is still working on the comprehensive report of its findings. It's currently 8 chapters long, but Thompson didn't say when the report will be released. The panel is due to sunset at the end of December. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News, The Capitol.
The person accused of carrying out the Club Q mass shooting days before Thanksgiving is charged with 305 criminal counts in Colorado, including murder and the state's equivalent of hate crimes. The 22-year-old suspect, Anderson Lee Aldrich, appeared in court this morning to face charges in connection with the deaths of 5 people and injuries inflicted on at least 19 survivors. The Biden administration says it will expand temporary legal status for Haitians living in the U.S. NPR's Joel Rose reports the decision could make tens of thousands of Haitians eligible for temporary protections.
The Department of Homeland Security says it's expanding temporary protected status, or TPS, for Haitians because deteriorating conditions in the country are too dangerous to force their return. Haitians who are already in the U.S. as of November 6th can apply for TPS, which includes authorization to work legally. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, who pushed for the expansion, says it will make more than 100,000 Haitians eligible for temporary status. The Biden administration has extended and expanded TPS for people from a number of countries, including Afghanistan and Venezuela. That's a sharp contrast to the Trump administration, which argued the protections should be temporary and repeatedly tried to end them. Joel Rose, NPR News.
Crossing the border between the U.S. and Canada could soon go a lot more smoothly. Dan Karpachuk tells us programs aimed at improving the flow at the border are reopening offices for the first time.